Yeah. I'm really jealous of your ending. Like, when you did your ending for Casual Magic, I might have, like, yelled at my computer because I was like, that's the perfect ending. Like, it's not about think magic. About it.
It's about the gathering.
Oh, and I was like, I can't take it. It's so weird.
We used to have an ending, and then we changed the name, and it's now just become a meme that Christian has to make up something on the fly, and it's always not.
It's always just really back and.
It's really okay. Bad.
Welcome to episode number 53 of the Memory Jar. As always, we are here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Prestwood, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I'm making sure I'm not using any Ks for this episode.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote that in the show notes, and you wrote making with a Q and a U instead of a K. You just refused to use K anywhere in the show notes, because we're talking about masks, the masks block, and that's M-A-S-Q-U-E-S, which, if you're listening to this, you've probably already seen.
We're really lucky this week. We have a special guest to talk about Mercadia Mask Block, and that is...
This week we have Shivam Bhatt, host of the Casual Magic Podcast, formerly of the Commanderin Podcast, and a member of the Commander Advisory Group. Shivam, welcome.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. We're really excited to talk about some old Magic sets with you.
It's one of my favorite things to do.
You know, this episode came about because you responded to an Aaron Forsyth tweet about a terrible card, which we'll talk about a little later, with, quote, "Now I want to do a deep dive episode on BS in the masks block no one has ever heard of." And we were like, that's our jam! Let's do this! So thanks for agreeing to join us for this episode.
Yeah, the card. Should we talk about the card in question briefly, or should we talk about it later on?
Oh, we'll talk about
Let's get there, because we have one thing we have to do first, which we do every week. We crack open the memory jar and hit the random card button on Scryfall. All right, this week is no joke. We got a real one. It's Gaia's Cradle.
Oh.
Gaia's Cradle is a legendary land from Urza's Saga, and it says tap, add green for each creature you control. But not only did we get Gaia's Cradle, we got the Judge promo from 1998, the foil Judge promo, which can be yours for a cool $1,000.
1K. Oh my god.
Now, you may be asking yourself, there's a Judge promo. I thought this card was on the reserved list, David. And guess what it is? There was a very brief time in which Wizards thought, oh yeah, we could just do reserve list cards as a special promo and it'll be okay. And it was not. They decided not to do that anymore.
Well, they decided not to do that anymore until the first dual decks came out. And then they had, you know, a Phyrexia versus a Coalition in one of the first ones with Phyrexian Obliterator as the face foil. Because they were like, oh, it's a foil. That's technically allowed because it's a premium card. It's not a normal card. So we can make copies of it. And everybody was like, No, that's not how this works. You don't get to letter of the law me on reserve list stuff. And after that gigantic protest and a lot of, I guess, behind-the-scenes shenanigans, they closed that loophole.
They did.
And so now, Gaia's Cradle, $1,000. I mean, not like the normal Gaia's Cradle is any cheaper.
No, it's, several hundred dollars. But what you're saying is we can blame Phyrexian Obliterator for the fact that I'm not holding a foil Black Lotus in my hand right now.
Probably. Yeah, probably fair. Right. I mean, that card deserves it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Funny story about this. So not only is there a Judge promo, do you know there's another foil printing of this?
Of Cradle?
Yeah, so it's a misprint. So they did a series of foil test prints for Urza's Saga that got out into the wild. And so there are some Gaia's Cradles where they don't have the text box. They just have the Wizards of the Coast swoosh. And
what? It's
absolutely gorgeous. And it's one of those...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I've seen it in person. There's a guy in Northern Virginia where I live and play, and he had a foiled-out Elves deck where he had both the Judge promo Gaia's Cradle and the misprint Gaia's Cradle, which is just a sight to behold. It was absolutely gorgeous.
To be clear, the coolest part of the text box is that the text isn't there, but the green mana symbol is.
Oh.
And so there's just a green mana symbol, like... kind of upper left corner of the box for some reason.
I wish you hadn't told me this, because now I need to own this, and I know that I could probably trade my car and still get like one third of the cost of it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they are pretty rare and pretty expensive.
There's no way that a foil misprint Gaia's Cradle... Look, man, getting my gold-bordered Gaia's Cradle was already enough of a challenge. So I'm just going to pass on the foil miss. I can't even say it without laughing at the idea of how much that card must cost.
Pretty crazy. Obviously a very powerful card. It's quite a cycle. I mean, the blue version, Talarian Academy, that taps for a blue for each artifact you control, banned in Commander.
I tried to get
very justifiably.
You tried to get it unbanned?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? Here's the thing. So I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good.
But so Gaia's Cradle is obviously one of the strongest lands ever made, right? Tap, give you green for any. And now, especially with Cradle of Itlamok just being reprinted, which is a slightly better than Gaia's Cradle because it also gives you colorless. But Cradle, tap to give you one green for any creature in play. In my Hapatra deck, that means I get like 75 mana. And then they've got Sarah's Sanctum, the white one, which is tap to give you one white for any enchantment you have in play. In my Tuvasa deck, that's good for about 35 mana or so. Talarian Academy, tap for one blue of any for any artifact you have in play. It turns out you can get a lot of artifacts for free. And with like Emery and Urza, can you imagine? Okay, I've just spammed out 15 artifacts and like tokens or whatever. Tap them all for blue with Urza. Then I tap Talarian Academy for another 50 blue. Then I'm going to untap it with Time Spiral and do all this again. And whoops, did I just kill you? It turns out artifacts are, as we've all learned with Kaladesh Block, a lot more abusable than everything else in Magic.
Yeah, a little too busted. I have a Talarian Academy that I never expect to play for any reason in any format.
I still tried.
Yeah.
I tried.
Yeah. I appreciate your efforts. Phyrexian Tower is actually the black card in this cycle. That's another nice one. And also, Shivan Gorge exists.
See, that's the thing. Like, it's funny because you look at the three Bant ones, right? The tap for a billion mana. And then you look at Phyrexian Tower and you're like, that's not very good. But in a vacuum, Phyrexian Tower is a phenomenal card. Sacrifice a creature, you get two black, and it turns out in a lot of decks, that is super useful.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It gets you, I mean, it'll de-elk your commander once they Oko it, right? and then Shivan Gorge. That's a card that happened.
I've never been more disappointed in my life when I've been through bulk boxes and I see like a rare land from Urza's Saga and I think I hit the mother load, they screwed up something, and then it's Shivan Gorge, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, dude, it's like two in a red, tap, Shivan Gorge deals one damage to each of your opponents. I can do better than that in white. You know? Like, come on, man. Come on. Ugh, that card
the raw power.
Definitely a card that was printed at rare.
It's on the reserve list.
Think about you opening your Saga pack. And you're at draft, and you just see the brown border of the land in the background. You're like, yes, it's going to be a cat. Oh, no. Oh.
It's always the Gorge.
Yeah, like that $1,000 Gaia's Cradle, Shivan Gorge is $1. And that's like, if they're being nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, Gaia's Cradle, certainly a winner. By far the most expensive card that we've had in our random card. So thank you, Scryfall, for giving us that one. Before we dive full on into the ridiculousness that is the Masks block, Shivam, let's talk about you a little bit. You are a big part of the community from your podcasts and now kind of running the Commander show and the Commander advisory group. Well, that may be an exaggeration.
I should clarify, just in case the boss is listening, I don't run the keg. I don't run the rules committee. I'm just one of the voices there.
Well, you're the first member of it that we've had on our show. So from our perspective, you're number one.
Well, and I'm also by far and away the loudest member of any of these two groups. So people tend to think that, like, okay, so before I get into who I am, let me just give you one 10-second story. So Sheldon Mennery, as of recording, just recently put out an AMA that he did with various members of the community. Sheldon Mennery being the guy who created Commander and created the rules committee. And, you know, we call him the godfather of the format. And so one of the questions he got was like, what do you think of, there's some CAG members or RC, like some CAG members out there who talk a lot and present themselves as the face of the group. Is this true? And Sheldon kind of just like, no, none of them are. We are. But it was kind of a definite side eye at like, Shivam. I was looking at you. And I'm like, yo, man, I just talk a lot. I don't.
You got takes. You got a lot of good takes. But you
so
got
look,
takes.
Man, I like Commander a lot. I like Commander a lot and I like Twitter a lot. So I end up combining the two, and there are times that are very slow at work. So you get to hear my wisdom. So I've been playing Magic for like 25 years, since about the Dark. I took a break in the middle there, like most of us do, and I came back hardcore into the game at Innistrad, and like I discovered Commander because on one of the message boards that I frequent, a friend of mine was like, hey, we're going to play by post. You want to jump in? And I'm like, I haven't played Magic in a while. Sure, why not? And they gave me a deck, and then we played a Commander game by forum post, which took like 3 weeks. It was amazing. But after that, I just became completely hooked on the idea of having a singleton deck that I can sit and just like take all of my favorite cards from the history of the game and put them in at any quality level. I don't need to worry about keeping up with Standard or Modern or anything like that. I can just play the cards I want. And because I'm a big fan of random and variants and like chaos, it means that like my deck is always going to pull up a different combination of cards. And like I go out of my way to do things like avoid tutors and avoid things that will give you consistency and smoothing in your Commander deck, because I want every experience I play to be completely different. And so one of the things is, I'm what they call like a cultural commentator. I write essays and stuff about how, Magic and race and society and religion and how they handle things, because I'm a priest. And so that's one of the things I do when I'm not, you know, working my normal day job. And I was like, oh, we're going to Kaladesh. Ooh, you guys are doing this very wrong. And so I wrote a bunch of stuff. And one of my friends, the professor of Tolarian Community College, he broadcasted out to the world. And so people started to know who I was. And I already had friends inside the building at WotC from like years of playing D&D or whatever. And one of the other things that happened was a bunch of like the Commander in podcast invited me to come on to talk about diversity in Magic. And from there, I just ended up joining the show. And for 3 years, I was on Commander in, which was at that point the second largest Commander show behind the Command Zone. And so I got to know a lot of people and explore my philosophy of Commander, which is hyper casual. Like, I believe, like, and one of the things that happened is Sheldon Mennery got to know me from that, and a lot of other people did. And I went and I got invited to go up to the pre-release that Loading Ready Run does for Ravnica Allegiance, the second Ravnica set. And they were like, that guy looks like he would be really fun to play games with. So they sent me an email that day and was like, hey, we're going to start this group of content creators and people who are personalities in the community to come on and help us broaden the reach of the Rules Committee of Commander, help us understand what the people are doing, and we want you to be part of it. And I was like, why? I'm just a scrub casual, man. My entire philosophy in Commander is I will take the most broken cards and play them as fair as possible. Like, whenever I look at a card that everybody else is like, wow, that is just broken on the face, I'm like, oh my god, I can use this to bring Lana War Elf back from the dead. And like, or you can bring back, you know, like, Emrakul. And I'm like, but that would just end the game. And they're like, yeah, that's a point. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I, like, okay, so my philosophy is, so on the CAG, the Commander Advisory Group, there's like seven of us, right? There's me, Josh Lee Kwai, Rachel Agnes, Ron Foster, Charlotte Sable, Olivia Gober-Hicks, Stibbs, I forget what his first name is. Adam Staborski. Yep. And who am I missing? Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so when you look at that, we've got this kind of spectrum of people who played Commander for a very long time and who have very, like, Josh and Rachel are hardcore super spikes, and I'm the opposite. Like, I'm like flavor first, super casual. I'm, the best card in my deck is Mahamoti Jin type of guy. And I play really strong decks that. So one day I was hanging out with Gavin Verhey of Wizard of the Coast. He came over to my house and I'm like, man, Gavin, I've been having a hard time winning with my decks. And he's like, sure, why don't you lend me one and I'll play with it and we'll see what happens. And so I gave him my decks and he soundly beat me with every single deck I had. And I was like, okay, so the problem is me. And it's just like I build really strong decks, but I play them so fairly. Like, I have Craterhoof in my deck. I play it on turn 12 fairly by paying 8 mana, you know? Or like, you know, I have Gaia's Cradle in my deck, and it taps for 3 or 4 sometimes.
So it's, I feel like it's a really hard as a Magic player. And I should say, I'm projecting a lot, and I'm making assumptions about the average Magic player, which it's not representative, I think. But I think for a lot of people, especially myself included, like, we're very competitive at heart, right? That's why we got into Magic in the first place.
Sure.
And so it's very hard to switch, to turn that switch on and just have fun. And, like, it's great you're sharing and you're broadcasting this philosophy, because for a lot of people, they get burnt out, right? Like, they're like, I just can't win. And you almost want to be like, dude, it's okay. Like, maybe it's not all about winning. Maybe.
And I, like, for me, when my decks win, it's almost like, oh, crap, did I just win? Yay, it happened. Oh, my God, it worked. But because, like, the way I look at it is, like, I'm a dad. I have a full-time job. Magic is my hobby. But I have a family. So if I get to block out 2x hours to go hang out with my friends and play EDH, I want to maximize that time. Because I value my time incredibly more than I value winning or value competition. So when I look at EDH, what I'm looking at is, this is a chance for me to hang out with my friends for a couple of hours and sit and jam a game. I don't want that game to end, like, immediately. I mean, maybe it does, fine. We'll shuffle up and start over. I don't care if I win. I don't care if I'm competitive, because I'm here for the experience. I want to have the cool thing happen. I want to have your cool thing happen more than even my thing. I want your deck to do the thing it's supposed to do. And if that ends up killing me, I got to see something cool happen, right? Like, my entire philosophy is, we're playing Magic for fun. We're playing Magic to hang out with each other. If I wanted to compete with you, if I'm playing a 60-card deck or a 40-card deck against you, I'm going to try to win. Because our point there is, we're sitting down and I'm trying to crush you because we just drafted, or we're playing Standard or Modern or whatever. I want to beat you. There's an understanding there that we have that I'm going to try to fight you. When we're playing EDH, the understanding is, my friends have come over. We're going to hang out. We're going to have some drinks. We're going to have some food. And we're just going to do really stupid things with our decks and have a great time. If it doesn't, like, the mulligan at my table is, draw until you've got seven that you can play with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you can't drop lands on, here, take some lands, whatever, start over, shuffle over, I don't care. I want you to play, and I want you to have a good time. If you leave my table salty or unhappy, I have failed. And to me, that is, like, the fundamental core, is that if you're not having fun, if you're not able to do the thing your deck wants to do, if what you want to do is beat me, go ahead. I'm happy to let you beat me, as long as your deck got to do the thing you wanted to do.
Yeah, I really share that same philosophy. My favorite wins are when I'm playing with someone else's deck and win with their deck. Yeah. Or when I give somebody else one of my decks and they win with it, doing something in a way that I wouldn't have done.
Absolutely.
That's the best time. So I totally agree with that. My decks are of a fairly medium power level for that reason. I want to have a good time. We're here to jam. Let's jam.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to lie. I'm a Timmy, right? Like, I love big, stupid, powerful effects. My decks are very strong. It's just, the thing is, they're only strong, like, for instance, last week I went and at GP Reno, I went and I upgraded my Zombies deck, which was the first deck I'd ever built with Grimgrin. And I took out, like, Temple of the False God, I put in Ancient Tomb, I upped the mana level and stuff. It got to the point that on turn three, or because of the way my mana rocks and stuff fell out, I was able to play Army of the Damned, which is, like, you put 13, you know, 2/2s tapped into play, and they're like, hey, how's it going, casual guy? And I'm like, look, man, 2 days ago, this deck had 30 lands in it, okay? I put some more lands, and suddenly it works. I'm sorry.
Well, and the flip side of it, too, I think, is that the most fun in EDH game, in my opinion, is the first, like, 30 minutes when everyone is building up resources and doing stuff. It's when people can't win, and you're like, someone's taking 15 minutes. Like, let's just move to the, like, fun,
look,
part.
Man, I like the build-up. I like doing the thing. But at some point, the game's got to end. Yeah. And that's when Craterhoof comes out and says, all right, you know what? We're just turning sideways and calling it a day. Like,
it's like, my friends who play with me know and will readily tell you that there are times where I say, look, if you just attack me, I'm not going to block. Just, like, kill me, please. And let's move on.
That's why I just built a Kroxa deck. And I put in the World Gorger Dragon combo. And I tell all my friends before I play it, I'm like, this combo is in there. You may see a World Gorger Dragon in the graveyard. I'm not going to combo out just to win. I'm going to combo out if the game goes too long. I just want to move on to the next game.
I mean, Christian, you are also history's greatest monster when it comes to playing Magic cards. So you're the like, no, come on, like Krark Clan Ironworks is fine. This Lantern deck is fair.
It is fair. You gotta kill some cards. Come on, come on.
All right, come on. All right.
You gotta
right,
crack some well, eggs to make that omelet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, draw some cards while you're
Christian's
cracking
more
eggs.
Like the throw the eggs against the wall and watch him drip.
Like, look, if you ask me what my biggest pet peeves are, it's when people play things like stacks, or people play things that your turn takes 35 minutes, or they play extra turns cards. Because in an EDH game, it's already taken like 45 minutes to get to turn player three anyways. And that just seems like anti-format to me. Like, that's just bad manners.
That's why my favorite Magic expression and my favorite Magic play is to shrug my shoulders and point at some cards and said, look, I think I've won this game. and then people are usually like, okay.
All right. Well, that's a great introduction to you and your commander philosophy. And why we're here today is specifically to talk more about the Masks block. Christian, do you want to give us a little background on this absurd block?
Yeah, I'll just be really quick, too. Mercadian Masks came in a weird time. It came at the end of the 90s. It was from 1999 to 2000. It was also right after one of the most broken blocks of all time, which is Urza Saga block, which it deserves another entire episode. All I'll say is...
we'll be back for that one.
Yeah. We're recording this in March of 2020, like halfway through March of 2020, and it's been a very crazy year of Magic. And if you're a new player, imagine this crazy year, and they ban a card every month, and then they find a whole nother combo deck, and that's what people are going into with Mercadian Masks. It has a famous story, which we'll link to the article where Mark Rosewater talks about this. Mercadian Masks is objectively a ridiculous and awful name for a set, but basically they had picked the name for the book, the tie-in novelization for the book, before they actually finished the set. So they were stuck with Mercadian Masks, and as protest, R&D replaced all of their K's with S-Q-U-E for a very long time, or Q-U-E, I should say. So it finally got to the point where they had to tell them to knock it off because it was like they were an invasion block and they were like, you know, Kavu, K-Q-U-E Titan.
Kwavu
Titan. So
now here's the thing, though, and in defense, I think Mercadian Masks is actually a really cool name because the masks refers to like old school masquerade balls, and that's kind of what like the ethos of like nobility and trading and mercantilism, like the setting was really cool. And the art, like especially like Rishadon Port's artwork is beautiful. I mean, I think that the mask stuff, maybe it's because I played a lot of Vampire right at that time. So I was super into like, you know, fancy pretentious spellings of things, but Masks is a fine name. It's not the worst in history. Like,
I like it. It's alliteration. It's really sing-songy. And like you said, the setting is cool. You know, when we came back to Ixalan and we got a bunch of pirates, this is where the pirates came from. This is where we got pirates the first time around.
That's not true. We had pirates in Legend.
We did. But this is where they really kind of came into their own. We got like multiple pirates doing piratey things.
Fair.
No Ramirez de Pietro here.
Right. Now, I will say this. I think, to be fair, I think I'm one of the few people in the world who's read the Mercadian Masks novel, and that is a pure heaping pile of garbage. And
That was not a good era of Magic.
No. So I'm a little biased because I read all three of these books. And let me tell you, Nemesis was good, if I remember correctly, but we'll talk about Prophecy later. Speaking of Prophecy, actually, it has the lucky distinction to be considered one of the worst sets of all time.
Is it worse than Nemesis?
Oh, God, it's definitely worse than Nemesis. It's up there with Saviors of Kamigawa and Homelands. That's how bad it is. When it was released, people were excited about Megiddo the Lion and Avatar of Woe. And like Rhystic Study was like, oh, this is bad.
You know, the thing is, Avatar of Woe is still kind of a good card.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Avatar of Woe
is a
great card.
Megiddo the Lion is not a good card. They reprint it continuously for some reason, but it's the okayest card of all time.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, the reason... Like, objectively, before we go into, like, the underappreciated gems of Mass Block, the reason why this set is considered bad, if you're new and you weren't playing in 1999/2000, which, why would you be? It was a very weird time for Magic. Is that the mechanics of the set were awful. Like, it was a very weird block.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had Spell Shapers, we had Rebels and Mercenaries, which broke Standard. It was Fading. Like, what does Fading do? No one knows. It's cool. It's like Vanishing, but better. And then the worst part, they had pitch spells, which are great, but then Rhystic is this weird, like, it's famous on Rhystic Study, but that's the only good card, trust us.
And it's not even a good card, it's a miserable card. Rhystic Study is a miserable, miserable card.
Yeah.
I hate that card so much, but that whole mechanic was awful. So.
Oh, it was awful.
And actually, yeah, one of the worst things...
Yeah, we got one playable card out of it, at least.
Yeah. One of the worst things about, though, is that none of these mechanics were named, so it looked like they were just a set without mechanics if you didn't know what...
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't know what you were looking for.
Yeah, and we just came from Cycling, like one of the most iconic keyword abilities of all time, to like Fading, I think, was the only major one.
The thing is, though, the Rebels deck was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it ruined Standard for a while, and it was super strong, and they changed the Legend rule because of Lin Sivi. But that deck was hella fun. It was really, really fun to play if you were doing it right. Yes, it was incredibly linear and did the exact same thing every time, but it was a beater.
Yeah.
It played like an old school Elves deck. It was just really fun.
Well, it turns out, who knew that being able to tutor up mana costs was a fantastic way to spend your mana instead of going down in mana cost, which was the Mercenaries.
The Mercenaries.
Ugh. Even young me, I remember playing FNMs and I beat like Hatred decks because I was playing Rebels, and that's one of the more busted mechanics of all time. The best part about this, and this is actually really notable, Mercadian Masks was the first set to not be on the reserve list.
Okay, but if you were going to put a card from here on the reserve list, which one would you even do? They're all garbage.
I mean, Rashad Import was a $200
card. Okay, Rashad Import should probably be on the reserve list. Okay, look, one of the other things that Masks block had a hidden mechanic, and that mechanic was making you miserable. And
yes.
Because there were so many cards in here, which literally, like, the Stacks deck, this set had Tanglewire, Parallax Wave, Rashad Import, all these cards that are just like the queen of misery, every single one of them. You can't play because you're just sitting here. Somebody just put a Winter Orb in here and end my life, right?
Ugh. Static Orb was legal during this time. So, yeah, that's what people were doing.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Well, really not so sad that I missed out on this standard during my long Magic break.
Oh, and immediately before Mask Block had come out, Smokestack had been actually put into Urza's Saga, so it was legal in this standard. Mm. So you could make a literal Stacks deck with actual Stacks.
It was not great. 1999 was not a fun time to be a Magic
player. They banned your namesake card, Memory Jar.
They did.
They did. Very justifiably. All right, so the Masks block was powered down with a lot of weirdness, cards that nobody knew how they were supposed to be tied together, one super busted mechanic in the Rebels deck. But we want to talk about some of the individual cards, especially the weird ones, and what's going on here.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I'm like, one of the things is that as we are Commander players coming back and looking, so the joy of Commander, obviously, is going through the old boxes at your LGS and finding, like, these random gems from 1,000 years ago. And it turns out that when you're taking it out of the context of being right after the Saga block, Masks had a lot of really just bananas cards that now, with cards that exist today and that have been printed in the 20 years since then, are legitimately busted. Or like, just holy crap, this card does way more than I thought it did when I was 12.
Right.
It does. Looking through the list as we were pulling some cards for this episode, I was amazed at how many of these I had not seen or forgotten about, or just didn't realize the first time I saw them that they were actually kind of rawly powerful.
Yeah, people just look at the Masks thing, they see the icon, they're like, oh, it's going to be like Homelands, just garbage. But it turns out Homelands also had Serrated Arrows, right? Like,
right?
One of the phenomenal card.
Oh, so what was the card that you were like, I have to see if I can break this commander?
So the card that got me to tweet about Masks in the first place that you guys found me with was Rashadan Pawn Shop, an artifact for 2 mana, which I will forgive you for not knowing right off the top of your head. Because, you know, that all-star rare from Masks, which said, pay 2 and tap it, shuffle target non-token permanent you control into its owner's library.
Oh, God.
Yay!
Yeah, this is, you know, it's got uses.
Looking at this, I was trying to figure out what you would use it for. And my first thought was, okay, so you steal one of your opponent's things. You don't want it to go to the graveyard. So I guess you put it back in your library. That seems very bad. And then I looked on EDH Rec, and I was like, oh, this card is actually played in one commander deck, the Xyrillin of the Claw deck, which is, it's a 5-mana 3-4 Viashino Shaman that lets you search your library for a dragon, put it into play, and then shuffle your library. The dragon gets haste, but then you have to exile it at the beginning of the next end step. So this lets you put it back in your deck and I guess keep getting the same really dragon good. Over and over.
Yeah,
it seems awesome, right?
Yeah.
Because I was also thinking that you could do a lot of like weirdo shenanigans with this, like with things like Sower of Temptation or Seasinger, something that lets you repeatedly control Magic their cards. You could take their stuff, use it, and then when they're about to get it back or whatever, just shuffle it back into their library. Or you take their commander and tuck it, right?
Oh.
Like, that's pretty cute. It wouldn't tuck it. In the old days, it would have. But now, it'll still just shove it back into the command zone.
Yeah.
2-mana tap, yeah. Send your dude back to the zone is pretty good.
That's so mean.
Now, this might just be me. In most circumstances, I'll just take a sac outlet.
Yeah.
But fair. This is a different way to do it.
Now, think about it like this. What if somebody had Bruna or Sigarda or whatever, the angel that says, can't sacrifice things. Shuffle your commander back into your library, put him back into the command zone, and lo.
All right, you heard it here first. Buy your Riashad and Pine Shops.
There are some weird Johnny tricks you can do with this, and I think that there's potential here if you're playing the kind of super low-powered, expectations-are-very-low kind of game. Xyrillin of the Claw is actually one of the classic EDH commanders. It was like one of the first real powerful ones from the olden days because everybody likes a dragon. I mean, the problem is it's mono red, but there are so many red dragons that you can kind of just get away with it.
Oh,
or you shove this guy into your Ur-Dragon deck. I don't know. I'm actually kind of like, wow, this card seems more fun than it looked right off the face.
It's got me thinking.
I like that.
Yeah. So we have a big list of cards. You pointed out one that you use in your lands decks.
Oh, yeah. So one of the ones that I just saw was called Forgotten Harvest, which is a card that I'd never seen before I started looking up for this show. It's a 1-green enchantment, which says at the beginning of your upkeep, you may exile a land card from your graveyard. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. Now, my favorite deck is Titania. Titania's whole jam in life is to throw her lands into the yard and recycle them multiple times to get a bunch of 5/3s. But if you've got this, you will basically always have fodder to just sit there. Or if you're playing a lands deck like with Windgrace, or you're playing a sack deck with Korvald, or you're playing any number of these things, being able to like throw a random +1/+1 counter on your thing, and if you've got Doubling Season or Hardened Scales, even like Gave or something like that, you can just Gave. I don't know.
No. It's Gave.
It's Gave.
Trust us. We know. We're very disappointed. As someone named Dave, I'm so sad that it rhymes with my name.
Hey, homie. Let me tell you my origin story, right? Like, so when I first started playing in my band room in sixth grade, and I saw my friends like, yeah, I'm going to cast Fireball on that dragon. I'm like, I need to know what this is going on. I love dragons. I go over there like, this is a Shivan dragon. It's just like you, Shivan. And I'm like, they spelled my name wrong. Screw that.
Nice.
Says, are there enemy colors? What is going on here? What's the enemy of red? Blue and white? Fine. I'm going to play blue and white. Now, anybody who knows me knows that I'm like the least blue and white person on the planet. But I've only played blue and white for like a decade. Blue, white, and green. Because screw them for spelling my name wrong on all the Shivan cards. Because now, every time I meet a Magic player, they mean, oh, just like Shivan Dragon. I'm like, yes.
No, it's like me. I was first.
I think it's interesting with Forgotten Harvest that it, like, Life from the Loam is a highly played green card in so many different decks. And this just works perfectly because you're not going to return every land you dredge. Might as well grow your creatures at the same time, right? Like, there's certainly, it's not the most high-impact card. It does stuff.
I think that there's, like, interesting value here. I think there's just some, like, neat tricks you could probably do with this, and it's, like, a dime, right? Why not?
So, on that same page, another one that's a little interesting is Renounce, which is an instant for 1W, and you can sacrifice any number of permanents and gain 2 life for each permanent sacrifice that way.
White sacrifice.
Yeah. Sack outlet and white. Why not respond to your own wrath by renouncing all your creatures?
Gross.
Yeah. Well, and
gain a bunch of life.
That's like a Zurinor, but for your creatures.
Or for your lands. You could just sack your whole board if you want to.
And the thing is that there's not really a mass sack outlet in white, which is why we wanted to highlight it. Like, it's very out of color pie for white.
So this is an instant that lets you sack any number of permanents. In white, or if white, you've got white and blue or something like that. If you've got Preacher and you're stealing people's things, or if you control their stuff, or you could pitch it. But that's like harder to do in white. What could you use this for? There, I can think of a lot of. Let's say you play the Wrath that exiles everything, then you sack all your stuff, or you have one of those like March of the Return type of cards or whatever, that you bring all of your little weenies back from the graveyard into play after having pitched them, and then your Cathar's Crusade goes off and gives you a billion tokens.
Oh yeah, and the other thing is like it also is a good way. Like if you're playing a tokens deck, for example, it gives you something to do if your opponent decides to wrath the board. Granted, you probably have some way to make them indestructible. But if you don't, it gives you an out to be like, well, I'm just going to gain 20, 50, 60 life or whatever, and that's fine. I'll make some more tokens next turn.
Yeah, and I mean, there's something to be said about being able to get your stuff out of the way of exile. Because exile is the worst thing that could happen to you in Commander, right? This feels like, oh my god, put this in like a Brea deck.
Oh.
Okay, so imagine this scenario. You've got Brea and you've got Marionette Master in play. Marionette Master says, Marionette Master does damage to target opponent equal to its power when an artifact goes to graveyard, or something to that effect. And if you've got that and you do this in instant speed, sacrifice all of your artifacts and just nug someone for their life, or a black-white aristocrats deck.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You could just like Zulaport Cutthroat them out of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh,
I don't want to belabor this too much, and I'm going to regret saying this, but I just kind of want to cast the sack on my lands and then cast Balance. All right.
I mean,
make your own Armageddon and gain a bunch of life.
I'm not going to lie. Yeah, cast Balance, and then just like in response, I sack all my lands, and then they're like,
yeah, but your life total is so high. All right, the next one on our list is one that has actually gotten a couple of reprints, and it's one I really like. It's Cowardice. 3 blue for an enchantment. Whenever a creature becomes the target of a spell or ability, return that creature to its owner's hand. This is pretty funny against people that are playing Voltron decks.
Oh, God. That's not nice at all.
Single target removal? No, I'll just return it all to my hand. It's fine.
Oh, man. You could do some stupid things with this.
Oh, yeah. Like, isn't there... Well, so it's not great with cores. Like, so there's a whole cycle of creatures from Tempest Block called Encores.
Yeah, I was just about to think of, like, Nomad Encore or whatever.
Yeah. No. They only target your creatures. Not great.
Yeah, that's a little less good. I'm sure that there's some stuff in there that can just zero target something. Well, maybe there isn't, because otherwise this card would be a lot more played if there was.
Fair enough. It's also really good. It on top of like the Voltron type decks, it really hoses the Aura decks. Those aren't necessarily Voltron, but like there's that new the Wonder Woman. I forgot what her name is in Theros Beyond Death, but it basically rewards you for playing an Aura deck, and it's just like
Sayana.
So yes,
she's super good. Yeah, like my Tuvasa deck would just fold to this, and it would make me very very sad.
I mean, I think there are actually a lot of options for this. I don't know if there's a zero cast way to target something, but if you think about cards like Aurelia's Fury or Angel of Salvation, where you can prevent 5 damage divided as you choose among any number of targets, there are a lot of ways to just target a bunch of different things, which seems good. Honestly, and you could use any ability that targets your own thing as a Crystal Shard, right? Return a card to your hand.
Yeah,
I can see this being reasonable.
I think that there's a chance to make this disgusting. Like, you'd have to kind of dig through it, but I think that there's ways to just make this a really filthy, filthy card.
All right, listeners, if you know how to abuse Cowardice, tweet at us.
Yes.
We're here for it.
Oh, man, this is gross. But even things like just Viridian Longbow just going and pinging and bouncing their stuff back to their hand is just kind of mean and great at the same time.
Oh, wait, I got it. It's Walking Ballista. Why kill your opponent when you can just bounce their creatures?
All right, another classic on the list, and I don't know how this got reprinted in Commander 2014. They must have just been desperate for cards. Is Armistice, 2 and a white for an enchantment. You want card draw on white? We got it for you. You can pay 3 white, draw a card, and target opponent gains 3 life.
You know what? When you're in white, you will take whatever you can get. Like, this is an awful card. This is a desperation card. JM Day's Tome is better than this card.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right? Like, there are colorless versions that are much better than this.
Or any of these, like, random tomes or spell books or whatever that... Like, Endless Atlas.
Yeah.
If you have 3 lands of the same name and tap it and pay 2 and draw a card, it's better than paying 5.
They're just all better. Oh, what a so atrocious.
This is in the classic cards where I get it. They put these in commander decks to be like, oh, this is the first card you get rid of, so you can update your commander deck. Why don't you just put the card you want to upgrade your deck in that makes it better and put it in the product in the first place?
I ask them that all the time. I'm like, why do you keep reprinting Temple of the False God? And the thing is that there is value in teaching a player that there are bad cards. There is value in that. It sucks and it's irritating, because we need to get the good cards, but it's good to at least sit there and say, like, man, your ancient tomb is just better than this Temple of False Gods. Yeah, it is. Turns out in the history of Magic, there are just cards that were better than that one.
But you know what's better than Armistice, and it's still a bad card?
James, they tell him, Dan, pay 4 mana, then pay 4 and tap it to draw a card?
Yeah.
Perfectly fine in a white deck.
Yeah, it's an artifact. Like,
Beggars can't be choosers. I did want to actually segue from that into a card that does help people who are playing miserable decks that don't let them draw. Because I saw this card, and it's called Mercadian Atlas, and I'm actually going to go buy like 7 of them. Because it turns out this is really good for when you're an idiot like me and only play 30 lands in your deck. And it's an artifact for 5 mana that says, at the beginning of your end step, if you didn't play a land this turn, you may draw a card. That's actually really, really good in a Commander game, because there's whole turns where you don't play your lands.
Personal Howling Mine is always the dream, right?
Right. And it's like, hey man, you missed your land drop. Well, I didn't make a land drop on purpose, but I will take that card.
Everyone recommends to run 39 lands, and secretly green's the best color because it gets you to ramp.
Yeah, that's not a secret.
That's not a secret, but maybe like mono black. You're just like, I don't want to play another swamp. I just want to draw another card. Whoa. We're breaking the paradigm here.
Find a way to put your lands into play on your opponent's turns. You've got it.
Seriously. I mean, the Mercadian Masks even gave you ability to do that with a terrain generator. The land, a non-basic land, that lets you pay 2 and tap it to put a basic land from your hand into play tapped. So fine, I'll just, you know, play my land on your turn and draw this extra card. Oh my god.
All right.
Wow, wombo combo.
I mean, and if you got Seedborn Muse, you could do it on every single turn except your own.
Oh, that's disgusting. Oh.
We did it.
I feel dirty now. What's that new one that was just the pseudo Seedborn Muse? It untaps all your lands at the end of your turn?
Oh, my god.
Wilderness Reclamation?
Yes, Wilderness Reclamation. Mercadian Atlas, man. This actually seems like a real, real good card to me.
There is a card I do want to talk about, and it's going to be a bit involved, so I apologize in advance. It's False Demise. So False Demise is 2 and a blue for an enchantment aura, and enchants a creature, and when an enchanted creature dies, return that card to the battlefield under your control. It was originally printed in Alliances, actually, so it's not exclusively a Mercadian Mask card. But I want to talk about it because it is part of one of the most ridiculous combos in the history of Magic that everyone has forgotten.
What?
So it evolves a card from Urza's Destiny called Iridescent Drake. And Iridescent Drake says...
3 and a blue for a 2/2 Drake that's flying and says, when Iridescent Drake enters the battlefield, put target aura card from a graveyard, onto the battlefield under your control, attach to Iridescent Drake. Great way to steal their Eldrazi Conscription.
Right. So you play this card, you play either False Demise or you play Abduction, and then you need a sac outlet. Well, turns out there's a way to kill someone with a loop with this. It's Ultra Dementia. And this was a busted extended deck in like 1999-2000 that rotated out very quickly. But it was a fantastic combo deck, like at the tail end of that standard format after everything else got banned.
Oh, that's gross.
And there are a bunch of black cards that you can use for False Demise here, too. You could just make a blue-black commander deck with a bunch
Zulaport
of recursion.
Zulaport Cutthroat.
But you could do this whole combo in mono blue, which is the secret beauty of this. Is you could play something like Thassa or, you know, a good mono blue commander. But you
or
have
a
this,
bad mono blue commander.
Yeah. But you have this combo at the end of the day, and you're just like, okay, like, I guess I win. Could anyone stop me with my 3-card combo? And you're like, oh god, I didn't see the 3-card combo in blue coming. Like, I thought I was going to get Hogak'd, and I got Hogak'd. I just got it in one color.
Wow, that's really good.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super easy to disrupt, but it's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, very weird art. I don't know which is better.
Mm.
They're both bad. Both the Alliances and Mercadian Masks arts are pretty bad, so pick your poison. But
yeah. Well, I mean, there's the one Alliances one, which is the person just breathing underneath the lake, hiding, which I dig a lot. Because it's like, it looks really cool. They've got a little bamboo pipe that they're pretending to be a reed. So you don't think they're dead. But the masks art, though, is like just this random zombie just swimming?
No, it's a merfolk. That's the worst part. It's the masks merfolk. And he's smiling? And like,
he's
I don't
just
know.
Like,
yeah, he's pretending to be dead.
And he's just like, haha, I'm dead. Maybe not that art, but I dig the combo.
All right, I'm going to go with one that I really dig. This is Overtaker. It's 1 and a blue for a 1/1 merfolk spell shaper. So we finally have a spell shaper, as we talked about earlier. This one, you pay 3 and a blue and tap and discard a card. You get to untap a creature, gain control of it until end of turn, and that creature gains haste. So this is the spell shaper for Ray of Command, which was an early instant speed blue active treason. This is an effect in red now, but this is a repeatable turn any card in your hand into an instant speed steal your dude.
I'd like that,
actually. Very powerful. Yeah.
So that was the whole spell shaper mechanic in Mercadian Masks, which again wasn't named. It was just a type of creature, but it's this idea that you can turn unused cards in your hand into actual spells. They range from Stone Rain to Ray of Command to like Unsummon, which turned out to be a busted common, and everything in between. And this is definitely one of the better ones.
Being able to Ray of Command on demand on the board is actually pretty disgusting.
Yeah, you're really going to make your opponents think about what their plays are when you've got this on the battlefield.
It's also a good gotcha because people forget. Like, if there's a lot of cards on the board, like, I'm not going to remember this Mercadian Mask rare. Like, I'm not going to lie. I'll be like, oh, I can attack, and then someone will just steal, you know, whatever I get Crater Puff Behemothed out. Like, you know.
It's also a great political card because you can do it repeatedly. So you can say, hey, attack me with this dude. I'm going to steal his creature, untap it, and block with it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so. No, I mean, the shenanigans kind of just tell themselves. That seems like a really solid card, actually. And just discarding a card is one of the problems I had with Spell Shapers is that I hate discarding. Like, I didn't put the card in my deck to throw it away. But this value is really good. And if you've got a way to recur what you're doing, and it's blue, God knows that there's plenty of ways to get those instants and sorceries back to your hand. You could probably do some pretty stupid things with this card. I actually kind of dig it a lot. This seems really interesting.
I'm just saying, I'm not going to be very explicit, but if you're playing, you know, Sultai colors, there's a certain mechanic that was released in Ravnica that is pretty busted. Like, Stinkweed Imp, those are great cards to discard. To Overtaker and to, like, any of these other spell shapers where, you know, you don't mind if it's in your graveyard. You know, or if you can go really OG, if you're in blue-red, you could play Squee Goblin Nabob, which is a classic. Mm. And, yeah, it's the same thing.
We've been talking about some cards that are fairly reasonable and kind of interesting. I want to talk for a second about one that no one should ever play for any reason. This card is called Vernal Equinox. It's 3 and a green for an enchantment. Any player may cast creature and enchantment spells as though they had flash. So just everybody. It's like a Concordant Crossroads, except instead of giving everything haste, everybody, including your opponents, just cast their creature and enchantment spells whenever they want. Why? Why would you do this?
This is a real heinous card.
Yeah, it's just so bad.
So bad. Just don't.
Why don't you just play something like, you know, Vedalken Ori or something that just gives you flash?
Leyline of Anticipation?
I have another very important question. Is this the most boring Rebecca Gay art?
Yes, actually. Because it's just three random rocks with runes on them. Okay, so every time there's a magic card, some artist in-house, the art director, will write a brief of the artwork and send it to the artist and tell them what to do. So Vernal Equinox, which is literally the spring, right? Like the sun at the height of spring, right? So why would you send Rebecca Gay, one of the greatest artists of magic of all time, an art brief that says, please draw three pillars with random runes on them?
Well, fortunately, we don't do that anymore.
Okay.
Thank goodness.
Wait. I'm going to blow y'all's mind. So, can you guess, according to EDH Rec, can you guess the number of decks Vernal Equinox is in reposted EDH decks?
Please tell me it's zero.
If that number is greater than zero, then I've got a lot of people I need to yell at.
At what point would you be surprised that it's great? It's definitely greater than zero. Otherwise, I wouldn't be mentioning this. But, like, what number do you think is obscene? What are we all thinking here?
I mean...
I just want to know what they would do with this. Like, why? What are you doing that you need this card so badly?
If it's more than 20, it's way too many.
It's reported in 322 decks.
Okay, that's not a lot, but that's more than I want to see. Somebody better be playing like Masks Block EDH or some, like, you know, $2 EDH deck or something, because that's a heinous card.
I bet there's some like CEDH combo, right?
Well,
that I'm just not thinking of.
So here's the thing, to defend it, there's two commanders where it actually does fit very well. So the first one is Kyanos in Tyr of Miletus, the non-black four-color commander. Miletus. Yeah, I have a history with mispronouncing names. I'm really bad. That one is like a group hug thing. So, like, I get that. The second one's actually, it's actually clever, and I think it might be the deck it would be played in. It's Kadena, Slinking Sorcerer, and that's the Sultai legendary that whenever you cast a face-down creature, you draw a card, and the first face-down creature you cast each turn costs three less to play.
Yes.
Sure, What if you also just, like, play any of the green cards that just give you the ability to cast your creatures with flash?
It's also a $1.88. Look, I mean, it's Rebecca Gay art.
I mean, it is, I guess.
I'm trying it's my like hardest.
The bare minimum for Rebecca Gay art.
Well, Rebecca Gay did get other work in this set. It's not just Vernal Equinox. She also did Calming Verse, which is very much the opposite. It's 3 and a green for a sorcery. And I love this text. Destroy all enchantments you don't control. Then, if you control an untapped land, destroy all enchantments you control. So there's no mana burn. There's not really a huge cost to doing this. This is a one-sided enchantment wrath, which would be pretty good in a lot of commander decks.
Oh, yeah.
That card is very good. It's just, like, yeah. Legitimately, Calling Verse is a great card, especially if you're playing in, like, a an enchantress deck, even. Because wiping out their enchantments while keeping yours is very, very important.
Well, and there's a card in Shadowmoor called Enchanted Evening, which turns all cards into enchantments, in addition to their other types. Mm-hmm. So there's the obvious combo with that. They had this mini mechanic in Prophecy where if you tapped all your lands, you got a better version of it. But if you didn't, it affected you as well. So you just tapped out to do the spell. And it's the best version because, like, you don't care. Like, sometimes you don't care if your enchantments are destroyed. You're like, oh, whatever. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but, like, to destroy all enchantments, I'll just tap the rest of my lands. Okay, I guess. Like, that can't be that bad, right?
And if you're playing an enchanter deck and you've got, you know, Wilderness Reclamation or Seedborn Muse, all your lands are going to untap anyways.
Right.
And better Rebecca Gay art.
Yes, better Rebecca. That's the most important part. Do we have any other hidden gems of Mycenaean Masks we want to dive into?
Okay, yeah, actually I did want to talk about one that was, well, I want to talk about a couple of them, but one of the ones I wanted to talk about is a card called Snake Pit. So this is a card that I guarantee you nobody's ever heard of before. It's a 3 and a green enchantment that says whenever an opponent casts a blue or a black spell, you may create a 1/1 green snake creature token. Now, it turns out that blue and black are, like, the most common played colors, like blue, black, and green, right? And if you're sitting at a commander table of 4 people, almost certainly somebody will be playing black or blue. 100% of the time, unless you guys are going out of your way to try to make a non, you know, like we're all doing like green white decks or something weird, you will always have somebody playing this, and this will always give you a 1/1 green snake creature token. And if you're playing your doubling seasons and parallel lives or whatever, that's like 4 green snake tokens. This is actually disgusting, and I'm going to put this into my Hapatra deck because, wow, that's like just free value, man.
I mean, I own a foil copy of this in my mono green snakes deck. So
does it work for you?
Why not? Oh, yeah, well enough. I mean, and if it doesn't work for me, that's fine. It's just a card in my hand. I'll figure out another way to draw cards.
I don't know. I mean, I'm always like, there's a lot of these cards that I've discovered lately that are things like draw a card for every black spell they play or whatever. And I used to just kind of like poo-poo them. And I'm like, what? That's just one color. I don't want to like limit myself. It turns out when everybody's playing black, something that gives you stuff when people play a black thing is pretty good.
Yeah, you definitely get to a point where somebody's playing like mono blue or mono black and they just look at it and look at their hand and look at it.
And then it's like,
how many snakes do I want to give you?
Overrun? And they're like,
I want to talk about a class of cards that were pretty common. And these are games of chicken. So an example of this is Sailmonger. It's 3 and a blue for a 3/3 human monger. That's right, monger is a creature type. And you can pay 2. Target creature gains flying until end of turn. Any player may activate this ability. And so it's like, you can give your stuff or their stuff or anybody can give anyone's stuff flying, which is weird. It's like, who starts, right? Who's holding mana open to activate this so they can block your now flying stuff with their flying stuff?
The thing that's interesting, it's like, these are really neat political group hugsy type cards. Mm-hmm. As in like, look, I'm helping you out. I'm giving you a flyer. And people are like, what's the catch? I'm like,
Right. I mean, this was a combo in Masks with Squallmonger, which was basically the same thing, except the ability was it deals 1 damage to each creature with flying in each player, and any player can do that. So you're just in this war of attrition. I think some of these cards are kind of funny. Like Brawl is a good example. Brawl is a great card. It's 3 red for an instant, and it says until end of turn, all creatures gain tap. This creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature. So it just sets off an absurd brawl.
Oh no,
it's the best red board wipe ish card maybe ever printed. Also, it shares the name of a format. Do either of you know the only other card to share the name of a Magic format? Not an officially supported format, just a format.
I may have spoiled this by accident, so Shivam, if you want to take a stab at this.
No, there's no card called Prismatic. Let's see. Commander? No, there's Commandeer. Nope.
There's Commandeer, yeah.
It's a red instant from Legends.
Chain Lightning. That's a sorcery.
Backdraft. Backdraft is a card.
Backdraft. Ah.
Yeah. Not one that people would guess, but yeah, Backdraft when you try to make the worst possible deck.
Yeah, I've played that. Chaos Backdraft is heinous. It is heinous.
Yes. So Brawl is good. Some of the other cards, I'll take, for example, the Flailing Manticore, Flailing Ogre, Flailing Soldier trio. I'll give you Flailing Manticore. That's the rare. 3 and a red for a 3/3 Manticore. It has Flying and First Strike, so that seems very good. But any player can pay 1 to give it +1/+1 until end of turn, or pay 1 to give it -1/-1 until end of turn.
You had me going, so again, and then you just pulled it out.
Just totally heinous. Like, all right, who activates this first? How are we going to do this? What nonsense.
I opened like 3 or 4 of these as a kid. I'm still angry.
Also, what is that art? That's a monkey.
Yeah, it's got a monkey face. It's very confusing.
Remember, this was in the same standard format as a much better Manticore ripoff called Masticore.
One of the best cards of all time of that era, yeah.
Like... So,
no wonder he's flailing, man. If I had to compete against Manticore, I'd be flailing too. More like failing Manticore, am I right, lol?
Lol.
Nice, got him.
I'm going to do a quick hit here before we go into the next one. We don't have to go deep because it's just on its face a dumb card.
So many of these are.
Yeah. So it's Divining Witch. Divining Witch is a 1 and a black for a 1/1 human spell shaper. And the spell it's shaping is a heinously broken card called Demonic Consultation.
Oh, God.
So Demonic Consultation, it was originally from Ice Age. It was 1 black for a sorcery. And so you would name a card. You would then exile the top 6 cards of your library. And then you would exile more cards in your library until you found the named card and you put it in your hand. It's really good. It doesn't seem good. It's fantastic. It's one of the
broken cards of all time.
Yeah, very broken card. And so Wizards was like, I don't know. What if we just made a repeatable Demonic Consultation? That doesn't seem bad. It is. Granted, it doesn't have haste, but come on. And that's all I got to say about Divining Witch.
And it combos. You just name a card that's not in your colors and put out Thassa's Oracle and win. Call it a day.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't want to talk about that anymore. Okay. What I do want to talk about... is Charisma. Charisma is a cool card that I actually really think is super breakable and probably should be more abused than it is. This is an enchantment for 3 blue mana, so it's blue. And it says, whenever an enchanted creature deals damage to a creature, gain control of the other creature for as long as Charisma remains on the battlefield. Which feels kind of insane to me. Like, if you stick this on something that's got a ping ability or some kind of target, some way, like Viridian Longbow or Prodigal Sorcerer or Wizard's, you know, Wand or whatever, something that'll let you just do damage to another creature, you can just gain control of it? Or what if you've got, like, there's those creatures that are all... There's that one pauper staple that's a rat that has... It's got Pestilence, basically, built in, right? So Crypt Rats has X, deal X damage to each creature and each player, pay only black mana for X. If you find a way to pump that guy or make him indestructible, and then you stick Charisma out there, you deal damage and control the entire table.
Yep. There are a lot of cards in red that have done this in the past. I'll give you a super obscure example from Betrayers of Kamigawa, Ronin Cliffrider. That's 3 red for a 2/2 with Bushido 1. But when it attacks, you can have it deal 1 damage to each creature the defending player controls.
Oh.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head, cards like Siege Dragon that would deal 2 damage to non-flying creatures. A bunch of cards that attack and just like deal 1 to a team. We just had one in Guilds of Ravnica. Swathcutter Giant did the same thing.
Or like Thundermaw Hellkite, take control of all their flyers.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I'm just going to stop y'all right there. I can't believe y'all missed the most obvious one of this, and that's Niv-Mizzet. Any version of Niv-Mizzet. Draw a card.
Well, that's not one to each. That's not one to each creature, no matter
what.
That's
one, one at a time, right?
Like, well,
yeah. Who wants to do that?
You're playing blue-red. You start casting spells, and you just end up gaining control of their
entire
board.
Fair. Like, and you are just going to take over the table.
I mean, or just put Charisma on your Squallmonger.
Oh! Whoop, whoop. We got there, boys.
We've got an in-block combo here.
Yeah, but I mean, this card just seems like, it just seems really, really good. There's a lot of potential here to do some bananas things with this card.
And let's note, the Gerard Capuchin art here is pretty iconic. I think this was like key art for the set.
It was.
Yeah, it must be. It's like, it looks fantastic. I don't know. This card seems just baller to me. Like,
yeah,
I can't believe I've never thought of it before.
Unless we've otherwise stated, most of the cards we've talked about today have only been printed in Mercadia masks, which is wild.
That's true. Not a lot of reprints outside of the masks block.
Right. You would think they would reprint Charisma because it's a reasonable card, but they just have decided not to reprint it ever. It's super weird. I guess, to be fair, you'd have to get Phil Foglio to draw the art on the new one. So.
Oh, man, I found the blue version of your Brawl, the Mercadian Masks Uncommon shoving match. Until the end of turn, all creatures get tap target creature.
What?
That's not good. That's not good at all.
No, it is not.
Oh, and weird mini cycle. This set has layers, man. It is like a...
Yeah, they're not very good layers.
It's like nachos. Sometimes you get salsa, sometimes you get sour cream, sometimes you get only black olives.
I love all of those things. I've got some not good layers for you. Are you familiar with Celestial Convergence?
What? Oh, yeah.
Celestial Convergence. Commander legal, 2WW for an enchantment. It enters a battlefield with 7 omen counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, you remove an omen counter. If there are no omen counters on Celestial Convergence, the player with the highest life total wins the game. If 2 or more players are tied for the highest life total, the game is a draw. So in classic Divine Intervention style, a Legends card that is terrible, this can allow you to draw a game if you want. Or it's kind of like Sudden Death rules in Magic tournaments where you get through turns and then highest life total wins.
Clearly.
It is in 257 decks.
Well, yeah, because it combos probably in a Demoloro deck with like Vampire Hexmage.
I was going to say, how many of those are Aloro?
Yeah, one of them is Aloro, yeah.
I have another question for you, and maybe you can help me with this. I want to talk about the wind cycle. People know Plague Wind. I don't know if they know that this is part of a cycle because some of the cards were so underwhelming. Plague Wind was 7 black for a sorcery that says destroy all creatures you don't control. They can't be regenerated.
It's still playable.
And that card's
now,
famous enough that that card's famous enough that it's become a generic term for a one-sided wrath. Wrath itself being a generic term for destroying all creatures. But some of these other ones, how do you feel about Blessed Wind? 7WW. For a sorcery, target player's life total becomes 20.
Oh.
Is that 9 mana? You going to do that?
I'm sure there's better ways to do that.
I mean, to be fair, though, this is in white. This is legitimately a bajillion damage-dealing spell in white. So, like, you don't see that very often.
It's good when your Celestial Convergence is about to go off against another Aloro deck.
You do it with Hive Mind.
I did have a game where I had infinite life. An opponent had 1,000 life, and another opponent had 250 life. So, Blessed Wind might have sped things up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that feels a little bit at that point, like, why don't you just play Soren Markov and drop him to 10 life?
Yeah, see, much better. Not 9 mana.
Although, Vitalizing Wind for 8 and a green, 8 and a green, an instant that says creatures you control get +7/+7 till the end of turn. Not even trample.
I mean,
just 7/7.
But how bad do you just want to use this as a 9 mana righteousness for your team
right?
and just
Wouldn't that be
eat
amazing?
Your opponent's everything?
Oh my god. And stick them onto like your 1/1 Death Touch Snakes or whatever and just be like.
Yeah. How you feel about Denying Wind? 7BB for a sorcery. You get to search somebody's library for 7 cards, exile them, and then they get to shuffle. You just want to take 7 cards out of their library for 9 mana?
No. If that's the best you can do for 9 mana in blue, then you've probably got bigger problems than whatever their best 7 are.
I was going to say, that's expropriate mana. Come on.
Don't play expropriate. I hate that card. God.
At least that one, if you're going to spend 9 mana, it does something.
Oh, it ends the game in a miserable way.
Oh, it does. I mean, it might work. If somebody casts this against me, I might concede, so I don't have to sit there and watch them slowly pull 7 cards out of my deck.
Fair enough.
Miserable, miserable magic.
Well, let's not forget the red ones. We've talked about 4 of the 5.
Yeah, well, I mean, Searing Wind, right? 8 in a red instant that deals 10 damage to target creature or player. Literally, there are like 40 cards that'll do that. I mean, you could play the Miracle one.
Oh, Bonfire of the Damned?
Bonfire of the Damned?
Yeah, Bonfire.
Yeah.
Or like, I don't know, any X spell?
Look, if you're going to put Heat Ray in your deck, that's going to cost you 11 mana to do 10. This only costs you 9.
Oh. Wow. Look at that. Now, mind you, you could like Heartless Heated Tugu, or like, what is it? Whatever one of those cards that like do damage and then double it. There's that red card that, right, like whatever damage they took, you double it again.
Oh, Furnace of Wrath and stuff.
Well,
like
not
that?
Just Furnace of Wrath. Yeah, I guess Furnace of Wrath and those like Dictate of the Twin Gods type of things. Nug someone for 20, but.
To be fair, I think if you're putting a lot of those damage doublers, I don't know if the first thing probably you're going to do is better. Like Searing Wind. Boom! Put this in the deck.
Right. There were some heinous cards in the 90s.
All right, well, let's just hit a few more cards because we've taken a long time so far. I'll give you one last one that's total nonsense and terrible. It's called Sheltering Prayers. It's a single white for an enchantment. It says, basic lands each player controls can't be the targets of spells or abilities as long as that player controls three or fewer lands.
What?
So,
basic lands.
You don't want to get your last three lands stone rained, Shiva. That seems bad. So you'll just play this.
So if I've already mono screwed, you can't jack me, is basically what this says.
Yeah. We're just given our land shroud until we play our fourth land.
Yeah, it just so happens that my three land player, like, you know, Gaia's Cradle and Nykthos Shrine to Nyx and...
Oh, no.
And Amaze of Ith.
We found the good use of this. I thought there wasn't any. Oh, no, that doesn't work because it's only basic lands.
Oh, no, that's miserable. That's not good. Wow.
The purpose of this card is to play... You play a Plains, and then you play Sheltering Prayers. And then your jerk opponent to your left, who has a strip mine, just doesn't know what to do.
I mean, I came here with Turbo Land Destruction. I thought we were going to play a game, and you got to pull the Sheltering Prayers on me. Now what do I do? Like, next, what are you going to do, play Equinox? Come on.
All right, what do you guys got?
One of the, like, actually kind of weird side cards called Overlaid Terrain. This is an enchantment for 2/2 green that... It starts with the promising text that says, as overlaid terrain enters the battlefield, sack all land you control. And, like, okay. I mean...
The value!
Now, mind you, and I'll get back to why that's an interesting text in a second, because the second one is, lands you control, now tap, add 2 mana of any one color. That is actually pretty sick. It turns all your lands into, like, tap for 2 and gives you, like... basically any color you want. That's actually really, really good. But you want to know why this card is actually secretly better than you think it is? Because if you're playing something like Titania, Windgrace, Gitrog, Korvald, anybody who sacks things and gets value out of throwing things to the graveyard, that is a whole lot of 5/3s or a whole lot of cards you just drew or a whole lot of damage you just did with Korvald. And like, I'm actually going to buy this card and put it into my Korvald deck because that's disgusting. And then if you play it with Splendid Reclamation, with all these now doubling mana you have, all those lands just came back into play. And you've got infinite mana that's like tapping for 2 of any color. Or if you've got like Crucible of Worlds or any of these kinds of things that let you play stuff out of your yard, it just seems disgusting.
Between 2000, when this was printed, and 2020, so 20 years, Wizards has had a lot of green cards that bring back a ton of lands. Like as you said, there's Splendid Reclamation. Another one is World Shaper. Like,
yes.
Oh man, mm-hmm. This World Shaper died. I had to sack all my lands. Now I have 20 lands. And that's already a strategy people use in a lot of EDH decks. Might as well just have another card on top of it that lets you double your mana.
Yeah, this is actually kind of gross. This is actually a really cool card. Wow.
Yeah.
The second line might as well be flavor text. The main line is throw all your lands away. Like, that's the part that's actually good here.
You had my attention.
All right, Christian, one more for you. What do you got?
This one actually is criminally underplayed, and it kind of fits into my type of aesthetic of playing Magic, where sometimes you just have to make everyone play fairly.
Did you put fairly in air quotes when you said that?
Yes, I did. Okay. It's a card called Kill Switch. It's 3 colorless for an artifact. It's 2 tap. Tap all other artifacts. They don't untap during their controller's untap steps as long as Kill Switch remains tapped.
Oh. So see ya, Mana Rocks.
Yeah. Yeah, like, bye-bye.
I hope you didn't like that Soul Ring, buddy.
No, this seems
really, really good. Like, this seems really hateful and really good.
I kind of like this in a mono-black deck that can't really deal with artifacts in other ways.
Yeah. Or also in, like, a red deck that's, like, just already doing, like, kind of, like, a hateful type of deck that just taps you down. Like, there's that one card which is, Like, whenever you tap your mono rock, I get to control it for the turn. And this actually seems really solid. I can actually see a lot of value for this because artifacts are incredibly popular in EDH. Mono rocks are ubiquitous in EDH, right? And Brea is a very popular commander. And Urza is a very popular commander. Emry is a very popular commander. If you tap them down and lock them down, that seems kind of disgusting.
Let's just caution people listening to the podcast. Using this on your own, great answer. A little mean, yeah, it evens the playing field. And the cool thing is you can choose to untap it on your turn if they play new artifacts.
Oh.
Don't play Mycosynth Lattice with this. Just don't. I didn't like, even think about that. That's evil.
God.
All right, so tons of weird and crazy cards in this block. I don't want to represent that there aren't also good cards in the block. I mean, you guys, in coming up with this list, Shivam, you highlighted a bunch of cards that are commander staples and are legitimately excellent.
Yeah. Like, for instance, I mean, obviously, we mentioned it multiple times this episode, Rhystic Studies, which is maybe one of the most popular EDH cards of all time. You know, do you pay the one? No, I don't pay the goddamn one. You can have that card. The entire Rhystic cycle is a pile of misery. But Rhystic Studies is misery that helps you. If I could snap my fingers and get rid of a card in Commander, that would probably be my like third or fourth one. But it would be on that list. But there's also cards like Bribery. That card is amazing. And then Food Chain, obviously one of the most powerful cards of all time. You know, sack a creature and then get another creature. You can basically pay a creature for one more or something like that. You can Food Chain, and Food Chain cycles are like CDH staples. They're vintage staples. They're legacy staples. I mean, this card is nutto. And then, of course, Black Market, one of the just classic black cards. Whenever a creature is put into graveyard from play, put a charge counter on Black Market. At the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, add a black for each charge counter on it. So if you've got an Aristocrats deck, or any black deck, really, you can just make a ton of mono with this card. It's very well-known and very popular.
It goes out of control. It rewards you for playing the game of Magic.
Oh, yeah. It's
creatures are going to die, so
yeah.
It's take advantage.
Fundamentally one of the most powerful cards. And, of course, one of my all-time favorite cards, Ancestral Mask, which for a long time was kind of just mediocre until they printed, like, Tuvasa and Estrid, and suddenly this card became bananas. Ancestral Mask, 2 and a green for an enchantment aura that says enchanted creature gets +2/+2 for each other enchantment on the battlefield. The brand new art that they did in Eternal Masters by Magali is just insane. This card is absolutely gorgeous. Run it any chance you get, especially now that Enchantress are just getting more and more popular. I mean, that card is just beautiful.
So, weird cards, good cards, cards that still have us scratching our heads as to why they exist. There's a lot of weirdness in these old sets, and even folks who played back when these were active don't remember these, don't remember why they were there. Do you guys have any parting thoughts for the Mask block?
It is one of the most forgettable blocks ever made. But especially in EDH with the 20 years of hindsight that we have, there's some really cool things. And if you're willing to go down a couple power levels, you can play some cards that other people will just be scratching their heads at or picking up off the table and reading. And frankly, that's one of my favorite things to do in Magic, is just like show off cards that nobody's ever seen before and then just have a real good time exploiting them in bad ways.
All right. Well, before we go today, I wanted to briefly talk about mystery boosters, mystery boosties, as we cannot stop calling them. We are recording this the day before the release of Store Mystery Boosties, and I just this morning listened to your most recent podcast episode with Gavin Verhey, the 9th episode of your podcast, in which you talk in depth about mystery boosters, and it was a blast. I actually have a Gavin story that I have not shared on the podcast about playing in the premier event. So I was at GP Richmond, or Magic Fest Richmond. I played in the sealed, and then I did a bunch of drafts the weekend of the Mystery Booster release. And so I sit down in my last draft, and Gavin's sitting across from me. I say, hey, this is a lot of fun. Congratulations. And he's happy with it. So we draft the first pack, and there's an extra card at the end that gets handed to him. And he says, hold on. We screwed something up. There's an extra card at the table. And I was like, actually, some of the packs just have 16 cards in them. Like, it's just kind of a whoops. And he was like, no, that's not possible. There are 15 cards in the pack. And I was like, no, really? Trust me. Some of the packs just have 16 cards. It's just, you know, a little goof. No big deal. And he was like, no, that's just not possible. And I was like, all right, well, why don't we everybody at the table count the cards in your pack, in pack two, and we'll see who has 15, who has 16. So guess who has 16 cards in his pack? It's Mr. Gavin. And he immediately takes out his phone and starts furiously texting somebody about something has gone wrong. There are 16 cards in these packs. And it's true. One out of every like 8 to 10 packs just had 16 cards in it.
Oh my God. He must have been losing his mind.
He was definitely very quiet for the rest of that draft.
So Gavin is a good friend of mine, and I've definitely chatted and hung out with him enough to know his tells now. And he's normally like me. He's very boisterous and happy. And you can tell when something has gone wrong because his voice just goes like, oh. And then he just gets his face drops and becomes very serious and very silent. And something has gone terribly wrong. Yes. And like you could tell because Misty Boosty is his like pet. Like this is one of his this is his project for the year, right? And so if something is coming out with more cards, he's probably just like, what in God's name just happened? Who do I need to go to Cartamundi and just eviscerate?
Well, everyone at the table assured him it's no problem to have an extra mystery booster card
in
the
pack.
Like, we're okay with it. Yeah, it was a problem, but he handled it really well and was a pleasure to draft with. And so I just thought that was funny as I was listening to it. I was like, yeah, there's one little untold story here that
I have so many
guys. Somebody needs to know. All right, Shivam, where can our listeners find you on the internet?
Well, if you want to find me, you can find me on my Twitter feed at Ghirapuri Gears, which is GHIRAPURIGEARS, which I'm sure y'all will put in your notes somewhere. And then you can also find my podcast, Casual Magic, with Shivam Putt, anywhere you find podcasts, like Spotify's and your iTunes and Google Play's and what have you. And please come listen. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, I'm a member of the Commander Advisory Group. So if you have any thoughts or questions or just comments about the state of Commander, feel free to hit me up. I am always receptive and I always answer, and I will always come back to you, even if you're telling me to go stuff it and that we should ban Flash or get rid of Sol Ring or, you know, make Commander a 500 card deck or I get it. I'll listen to you and I will transfer your thoughts and prayers to the Rules Committee and hopefully get action done. But I'm super happy to talk to anybody who's a fan of Commander or just hang out. I love talking about Magic.
We will, of course, put all of that information in our show notes. Thank you, Shivam, so much for joining us today. This has been a blast.
Oh, absolutely. This is fantastic. I love talking about old cards and old sets. And this was definitely a lot of weird things I've never seen before.
All right. Well, you're welcome back anytime. We will do this again.
Oh.
Listeners, you can find us on Twitter at our handle at MemoryJarMTG. We would, as always, love your feedback. And please tell us what cards you want to remember.
Again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at CMY Company. That's company with a K. And we always have a terrible time with the ending, but until next time, may you find some hidden gems, especially in some mystery boosters.